Professor Shoup, the former executive director of the National Institute of Communicable Diseases and Professor Emeritus of Virology at Fisk University. Good afternoon to you, and yeah, welcome back to Chai FM this week.
Good afternoon, Simon. Thank you.
Prof, we today the topic you're going to address with us is flattening the curve.
Flattening the curve, yes, it's a term which is often bandied around, and I thought it might be useful just to really explain what it is and what the basis of it and what the implications of it are.
Yeah, that's
good. Right. So actually what we mean by the curve is it's actually an epidemic curve. And what you do is you draw a graph of the number of cases over a time period. So in the case of COVID, in the case of coronavirus, you've got a brand new virus, no resistance in the human population. And if nothing is done, it would cause an explosive epidemic, or what we actually call in scientific terminology, a virgin soil epidemic. Now, historically, that kind of thing happened, for example, when the Spanish conquerors came to Central America, there was no immunity to measles, for example. In the native population, and spread like wildfire, wiping out 70 to 80% of the population. That's a virgin soil epidemic. And if you draw that curve, that epidemic curve, where there's an explosive epidemic, it's a very high curve, which is very sharp, very narrow. And that would occur, for example, with coronavirus, which is similar to the other virgin soil epidemics because there's no vaccine. And the only protection that we really have, I think we've emphasized a few times, to stop the virus circulating is to put things like social distancing and personal hygiene into place to try and interrupt the transmission. Going technically, what we would say, we would convert that basic reproductive number. In other words, the number of people that are infected from an infectious person, the basic reproductive number into an effective reproductive number, to reduce it. And thereby what we're doing is that we change that sharp high curve into a lower curve, in other words, the same infection but over a longer period of time. And I think the important thing that people sometimes misunderstand, that this does not mean that we control the infection. The virus ain't going anywhere. The virus is still there. Same amount of virus, same amount of infectious people. And people who are susceptible to infection. And therefore that curve just gets over a longer period of time. Because it's a longer period of time and it's a lower curve, it allows the healthcare system to kind of build up its resources to be able to treat infections. And therefore the mortality is very much lower. The severe illness is very much lower. But that's what it actually means by flattening the curve. That epidemic curve, instead of being sharp, high, becomes low and long and longer and over a longer period of time.
And Prof, if you had to give our government and our leadership a report card as to progress in respect of flattening the curve, what does your report card state?
I think so far, up to now, we've done very well. You know, compared to the rest of the world, our mortality rate is fairly our case fatality rate. In other words, the number of people who have died who've been recognized as cases is pretty low. We are now about 1.9%. And you look at, for example, European countries where it's 3-5, in fact, in UK up to 15%. So on that criteria, we are doing pretty well. However, we are still in the early phases of the epidemic.
And Prof, are we testing enough? Because it seems to me that the testing, by all accounts, is key. And in your opinion,
exactly right. That's the point. I think one of our weak points is the testing. First of all, are we testing enough? The answer is probably not. Are we testing the right way? Probably not as well. The problem is that the testing is done by a house-to-house testing strategy, and that's probably not the best. What we need is testing stations. We need innumerable testing stations throughout the country where people can go, if they do have symptoms, to be tested. That would be the ideal way. So I think that the testing strategy, you're right, should be improved. Hopefully it will be improved soon. Okay. There are problems with the turnaround times of the tests and so on. So all those are kind of weak points we need to be addressed.
Prof, in the very short amount of time that's remaining, a word that I'm seeing all over the press today is serological. What is serological testing?
Serological test is testing for antibodies. Now, the antibodies develop fairly late in the infection, so you can't use it to actually diagnose the infection. But it's very, very useful for testing for people who've had the infection, because those antibodies last for a long time. And if you do a serological testing of the population, you can then get a good idea of how many people have had the infection. And the importance of that is that you can then work out, you know, when you'll get to what we call community immunity or herd immunity. It's thought to be about 60 to 70%. So if you test the population, it tells you how close we are to developing herd immunity, where it'll kind of then, the epidemic will resolve.
Okay. Prof, it is 4:30. We're going to leave it there. You're going to be back with us same time tomorrow?
Great. Thanks, Simon. Thanks for inviting me. Yeah, we'll be.